NewsTalk.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
All right, it's Wednesday, December the 20th, 2017. I am David Knight. We have a lot of information today. There's a new Hillary Clinton scandal. There are some clips that we have of the speech that President Trump gave about the national security that is excellent. One of the best speeches I've ever heard a president make. Of course, CNN says, here's six whoppers told by the president. Well, that's a starting point to find out where the good bits are, the parts that they really don't like. So we're going to talk about that. And we also have, of course, the tax situation. Do you know why they held up the tax vote last night? Do you know why they had to go back and do it again at the House? Well, we're going to tell you what's behind that. We're going to give you Democrats' reactions to that. You will not believe what they had to undo in the tax bill for the benefit of our senators. And let me tell you something. This is another example of why we got to get these guys in there, out of there. We need to have major radical changes in the Senate, and needs to start in these primaries that we've got coming up. But of course, the story that was on the Drudge Report about climate change now is driving record snows in Alaska mountains. This is from Reuters, and actually it's from a couple of universities who do this kind of stuff because they get paid to do this kind of stuff. They get paid for these research grants by the government to produce these kinds of phony results. They say snowfalls atop an Alaskan mountain range. Who would think that there would be snowfalls in an Alaska mountain range? Obviously, there's some sinister climate change going on here when you got snow in the Alaskan mountains. They have doubled since the start of the industrial age, they say. I wasn't aware, frankly, that there was anybody on top of the mountains in Alaska at the start of the industrial age, 1700s, measuring the snowfall. Maybe we got it from the Russians. I don't know. Are the Russians colluding with the climate change industry? I don't know. But this evidence, says Reuters, that climate change can trigger major increases in regional precipitation, according to research published in the journal Scientific Reports. Well, there you go. That says it all right there. Listen, I was around in 1970. I was in high school, so I remember it vividly when they had the very first Earth Day. And you had the big concern there was global cooling, not global warming. And, of course, you know, then it became all about global warming, but then they had to change it because the measurements didn't match the climate models. That's why we had ClimateGate. They're passing around emails saying, wait a minute, our models don't match the decline in temperatures that we're seeing. We're going to have to fudge the results. We got to conceal this. And they wouldn't reveal that for quite some time. East Anglia University in the UK was where most of this action was taking place, but it also took place with the University of Virginia. Michael Mann, I was involved with an organization that tried to get those emails, tried to get his data revealed. No, they're going to cover all that stuff up, even though they've already written their reports. There's nothing proprietary there. Even though it was funded by the government, even though he wrote the emails on government time, even though policy was based on his conclusions, we're not allowed to see the raw data. What does that tell you? That tells you they got cards they're not showing. Tells you they're cheating at the game, doesn't it? And of course, interestingly enough, where they showed up was on a Russian server eventually. That's where we saw first 1,000 emails and 5,000 emails a couple of years later about ClimateGate. It caused a very big stir when the quotes came out, but then, of course, their political allies and the press tamped down any concern. That was 10 years ago when they had a much better control of information to the public than they do today. But when we look at this and we go back to the 1970s and we remember the first Earth Day was all about global cooling and it was being pushed by some guy called Paul Ehrlich. Remember him? Remember his book, The Population Bomb, saying that we've got to depopulate the Earth or we're going to destroy it. How familiar that is. They've kept to that same line of depopulation. Let's kill all the people because of this imaginary problem. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You found it. from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You talk about death and taxes being inevitable. Well, maybe we just got a little bit of a reprieve. It's kind of like somebody saying, hey, your cancer is in remission. Well, you know, your taxation is in a little bit of remission right now. Still may kill you, but it's still in a little bit of remission. So let's celebrate that. But let's first take a look at why we had this late night reversal. You saw the headlines. The House passes it. Now it's going to go to the Senate. Then it comes back and says, oh, the Senate passed something, but now the House has got to revote on it again. It got sent back to the House. Well, what was going on with that? I think it's very telling what happened with that. As Reuters is putting out, U.S. House to vote again on tax bill. Trump is on the verge of a win. Well, he now has that win. But let's take a look at the process of what happened with this, because I think it is absolutely despicable. It tells us a great deal about the Senate in general, and it tells us even more about the Democrats and how truly despicable they are. So what was at the center of this? The center of this was Ted Cruz did something right. He had a tax break for homeschool families. That was the problem. You can't have a tax break for homeschool families because the Democrats and establishment Republicans are in the pocket of the National Education Association, the teachers union, and they're going to punish that little bit of money. It's not going to break the budget. You don't have that many people homeschooling, and it wasn't much of a tax break. But you can't give any kind of a break to homeschools, because if people found out what it was like to get out from underneath the control of these oppressive schools and the way they damage your children, if they had any kind of economic capability to do that, they would never go back. Believe me, you would never go back. And again, when we look at the envy in this tax bill, I'll tell you again about my kids at the playground one day. They were there at the playground, and this kid was out of school. And he goes, so what school do you guys go to? It was a year-round school. He goes, are you guys on a break? And I said, no, we're homeschooled. And he goes, you don't go to school? And I go, no. That's not fair. And he got so angry. It was really funny. But it was exactly the kind of temper tantrum you see going on throughout the Democrat Party now about taxes. You know, he was on vacation, but it wasn't enough for him because he saw these guys as being homeschooled. So he thought, hey, you're getting more of a vacation than I am. And that's what's happening. That basis of envy is the basis of the Democrat economic policies. It's always based on envy. They look at this and they say, wait a minute. All right, I'm getting, just like this kid, I'm getting some time off. They say, well, I'm getting some money back from the government. But that guy over there is getting more. I'm angry about that. I can't enjoy my time off because those kids are getting more time. I can't enjoy my tax break because that guy is getting a little bit more than me. That's the envy that they always push out there. But let's talk about their hatred of homeschoolers here. Because what happened with this? This is a tax break proposed by Ted Cruz here. Now, we'll tell you why he did this. It's something specific that affects Texas homeschoolers, but it affects, it shows the national bias against this. And of course, it was decried, as they point out in the Houston Chronicle, it was decried by the Democratic foes as, quote, a backdoor assault on public K-12 education system. Well, you know what? If you got to hold a gun to somebody's head to support your system, maybe you don't have a good system. Nobody has to force people to do things that are good for them. They said it would allow families to use tax advantage 529 accounts for homeschooling expenses. Well, what is that? It was something that was just set up to allow people to save money, like a Roth IRA. If you don't know what a Roth IRA is, that means, you know, you got a typical IRA where you don't pay taxes until you withdraw the money. And so people will do that to defer income till the time they retire. With a Roth IRA, you still pay taxes on that money, so you don't get a write-off this year. But when you invest it, after you've paid the taxes on it, and then you invest it in something, if you make money, if you have a gain, if your stocks go up or Bitcoin goes up, whatever, if you have a gain on that, you don't pay any taxes on that gain when you take it out. So you've paid taxes on it at the beginning, hoping that it's going to go, and then investing it, hoping that it's going to appreciate in value and that you won't have to pay a tax on the appreciation. And so that's what they don't want to allow to have happen with homeschoolers. Still allow it for universities, still allow it for private schools, but not for homeschools. Isn't that interesting? How discriminatory the Democrats can be, isn't it? Another part of the Cruz Amendment allowed families to use this for private or religious schooling. Apparently, that would not be affected. The full tax subsidy could still apply in states that define homeschooling as private education. But of course, then the hooks that they put into you are you've got to pretend that you're a private school, and then they start to regulate what you do as if you're a private school. So we've gone through that song and dance in North Carolina, where they say, oh, pretend that you're a private school. Give us a name. Tell us who the directors are and so forth and so on. Send us reports and so forth. In states like Texas, however, you don't have to define your homeschools as private schools. And that means that they're not going to allow the 529 accounts to be done. That is interesting because, you know, when we look at this, it was just a couple of days ago that I talked to Sibel Edmonds about Fethullah Gulen. He's a Turkish imam who has well over 1,000 schools. It might be up to about 1,500 schools now worldwide. Most of them operate as religious madrasas, but here in the United States, they do not do any explicit religious instruction. They send a lot of people on junkets to Turkey. They teach the Turkish language, even though here in Texas, there's not too many people that have a demand for Turkish. You know, you might want to learn Spanish, but not necessarily Turkish language. But they teach Turkish culture, Turkish language. They send people on junkets to Turkey. But, of course, they don't teach Islam. Right. Right. They take the best students and send them to Turkey on junkets where they probably immerse them quite a bit. Nevertheless, this guy is getting about $750 million, $750 million for his network of quote-unquote secular schools here in the United States. Taxpayer expense. Now, a Turkish imam who has connections to the intelligence service, who has been investigated quite a bit by the FBI for things that he's done here in the United States, but has a lot of politicians in his pocket. He gets $750 million, but not 1 cent for homeschoolers. Not 1 cent. That's your government at work. And so what they point out is that these would have allowed up to $10,000 per child to be taken and put into this 529 savings plan. So understand what's going on here. They're telling us that it would break the budget. If homeschoolers were to earn money, pay taxes on that money, then what they have left over, they save it. And then if that money goes up instead of down in their investments or their savings, then it would break the bank if they don't get the tax on that increase. That's how miserly they are about this. But it also shows you how much they hate anything that is not under their control. They want to control education because they want to control the next generation. That's why we don't put our kids in school. We homeschool them because you're not going to control my kids. I'm not going to turn them over to you to be indoctrinated into this political correct snowflake nonsense that you've got everybody tied up in knots about. All this white privilege and everything else. I'm just not going to be a part of that. I'm not going to let you turn my kids into Marxist snowflakes. You don't get to do that. And I will pay anything to keep that from happening. But they will do anything to keep you from having the money. It would have been a game changer, they said. Homeschoolers, they work very hard because you can't have two parents working full time. And so they have to go through some sacrifices. So I want to play for you what Bernie Sanders had to say about tax reform. Because after coming after the homeschoolers here, he's going to tell you what he thinks of the rest of you and who your income really belongs to. It doesn't belong to you. It was Bernie Sanders who shut this down. Bernie Sanders and Ron Wyden shut down this tiny tax deduction for homeschoolers. But he thinks all of the money of all of you belongs to him. Stay with us. We'll be right back. take a look at the tax reform. Who's getting money back and how much? We've got some information now. This has been in a state of flux for quite some time. We're going to have the reactions of the Democrats, starting here with Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, as I just said in the last segment, we've got a radical Turkish imam protected by the deep state, brought here by the CIA and so forth, when other people in the government tried to keep him out. But we've got a radical Turkish imam who is getting about $750 million of taxpayer money a year, running a network of charter schools by this Islamic cult. That's not a problem. Bernie Sanders doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Most of politicians don't. But he has a problem with homeschoolers getting a little bit of a tax break. Now, they're not going to get money given directly to them, like this radical Islamic cleric. They're not going to have money given directly to them, like the government schools. No, instead, this would be money that they worked for, that they paid taxes on, that even after they paid the taxes, they were able to save a little bit and invest it into a fund. And if that fund went up a little bit, that account, then they wouldn't be taxed on that little bit of an increase. But that's too much for Bernie Sanders. No. Too much for him. He doesn't want them to have that tax break because, see, that money belongs to him. And it's not just the homeschoolers. Bernie is furious. Bernie thinks all of your money belongs to him. All your money belong to us, say the Democrats. Let's play Bernie Sanders' reaction to this horrific idea that you would have something to say about how your money that you've worked for is spent. Instead, it ought to be spent in Washington. Let's play Bernie Sanders, video clip 5.
Today, in an unprecedented manner, we are witnessing highway robbery in broad daylight and a looting of the federal treasury.
Hold it right there. And we start out with Bernie, because Bernie is the one who raised this objection to the homeschooler being able to put it into kind of like a Roth IRA, but it's for education. That after they earned the money, paid the taxes on the money, saved the money, invested the money, if they had a return, no. You're still going to have to pay taxes on that. That's Bernie Sanders. And so he's the one who stopped this. That's why the House had to go back and revote on it last night. And so what he's saying is, this is a looting of the treasury. The Democrats think that everything that you earn, everything that you have, belongs to them. Quite literally. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. You see this every time these people talk. This is an expenditure. This is a looting of the treasury, because you are their property. You are their chattel property. You are their slave. What is a slave but somebody for whom all of their labor, all of their possessions don't belong to them, but belong to their plantation masters in Washington? That's the plantation. You thought that the Civil War ended slavery? No. It ended private slavery. What it did was it established all of us as being slaves of an imperial government operating out of Washington. We're all part of that plantation to one degree or the other. You may work, but your money doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the federal treasury. And if anybody reduces some of your income that is taken from you, that's where the looting accounts. But he calls it looting if the money doesn't flow to them, because they already own it, because they own you. Here's the rest of what that contemptible old man had to say.
Today is a victory for the Koch brothers and other wealthy Republican campaign contributors who will see huge tax breaks for themselves while driving up the federal deficit by $1.5 trillion.
Hold it right there. Bernie Sanders, the socialist, has now turned into a budget hawk, just like Bob Corker. These are guys who, for the 8 years of Barack Obama, said not a word about the cumulative debt of this country going up by $10 trillion. It was a $10 trillion debt when Barack Obama became president. For 8 years, it went up. And at the end of that, it was $20 trillion. So he's going up, $1.25 trillion a year. He's concerned because they have projected out for a decade that it would go up $1.5 trillion over 10 years. They were sitting there silent while it was going up nearly that same amount every year under Barack Obama. But now for Bernie Sanders, for Bob Corker, it's a problem. So here's the rest of what Bernie has to say.
It is a victory for the largest and most profitable corporations in our country, like Apple, Microsoft, Pfizer, and General Electric, who, despite record-breaking profits, will now see hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks. We are living in a moment in American history of massive income and wealth inequality, when the very rich are becoming richer while most Americans are becoming poorer. Yet, according to the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, this legislation, at the end of 10 years, will provide 83% of the tax benefits to the top 1% and 60% of the benefits
to the top one-tenth of 1%. Hang on a second.
Meanwhile,
that's enough of Bernie. I can't take any more of that blank communist. We'll talk about where the money is coming from. And, you know, when you talk about what happens 10 years from now, again, that is pure fantasy. We don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. Even if Trump is reelected, we're in the term of the next president halfway through. If Trump is not reelected, you know, we got two other terms that are there. So who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what the makeup of the House and Congress is going to be? If you got more people like Bernie Sanders, you can bet that they're going to take everything from everybody because he thinks all your money belongs to him. And I agree with what he has to say about the income consolidation at the top. There are a lot of structural reasons for that besides the tax code, and he doesn't do anything about that. But let's take a look at some of the other back and forth here. The good Sanders, Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, got into a back and forth with a congressman there. Before we get into the details, I think this is interesting. She had said Democrats shouldn't need to be begged to be part of cutting taxes for the American people. Now, why is it that you have to beg the Democrats to cut taxes? We just showed that to you. Bernie Sanders thinks that money belongs to him. And he's like Ebenezer Scrooge. I pay enough for these institutions, and the money should go there. So I'm not giving you no huge tax cut. You know, I'm not giving you another lump of coal either on your heater. So I'm keeping it. So you have to beg them for a tax cut, and they don't want to give it to you. That's what Sarah Sanders was saying. She said they should have been begging and banging down the door of the building behind me to be a part of this process, to be a part of helping more Americans be more successful. No, they're not. They're not. And then The Hill took that quote and they put out a tweet that said, Huckabee Sanders says GOP begged Dems to work on tax reform, which was not exactly, as you just heard, what she said. So then a Democrat Congressman, Ted Lieu, quoted the inaccurate tweet to attack Sarah Sanders and said, Dear Press Secretary, you don't serve in Congress. I do. And I can say with absolute certainty that you are lying. And she came back and she said, I don't serve in Congress, but I can read. And if you had read the story, not an incorrect tweet, you would see that what I said was Dems should be helping Americans to keep more of their money. You should spend less time tweeting and more time doing your job. Well, they see their job as keeping the money in Washington and helping their big corporate friends that they pretend they don't have anything to do with. And we'll find out more about that later on as well with Hillary Clinton. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, live and uncensored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. We're going to take a look at the tax cuts and also some more reactions to this as well, because you need to know what these people think of you. They call us deplorable. I think these communists who operate off of envy and jealousy, divide and conquer, the false virtue signaling about, oh, look, corporations getting tax breaks. Yeah, okay. Well, there's a lot of small corporations that are getting tax breaks too, but they give tax breaks in a different way to the corporations. They only give those tax breaks to specific corporations who pay them directly. That's the way the Democrats roll. It's also the way the Republicans roll at the top as well. But any kind of broad-based tax cuts on corporations, because, you know, it's not just the big guys. It's not just Apple Computer that has a corporation. There's most of the mom-and-pop businesses are corporations as well, or set up in other structures that are going to get massive tax cuts. It is going to be a big win for American business, because even in America, they have to compete with foreign goods that are coming into this country without the taxes of that country attached. So even if you're not involved in export-import competition, even if you're just providing goods and services here in the United States, the goods that you create here in the United States, if you did want to sell them somewhere else, you're going to have a big disadvantage because the American taxes are going to be put on and never taken off of the goods that you try to sell in Europe or that you try to sell in China or whatever. But the taxes that they put on, they take them off before they come into America to compete with you. So if you're not even involved in international competition, you're still going to pay that. Still going to pay that because those goods coming in won't have the tax attached to the cost of that good as it came in. Before we get back to this real quickly, I'll remind you of some of the items that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. We finished our 34-hour broadcast, but we have kept most of these items on sale, and we have added free shipping. So now's the time to get it before the end of the year. We got 50% off and free shipping. Some of these items, more than 50% off. And free shipping store-wide here on this. We have Super Male Vitality, Brain Force Plus, both of those 50% off. Our new products, Alpha Power, Cell Force, Red Pill, those are 50% off. And, of course, everything free shipping. Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, our Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off, free shipping. All the Super Blue products, that's our toothpaste that has no fluoride in it, but it has iodine and nano silver to kill bacteria that causes gum disease, tooth loss, and then heart disease. That's the way that progresses. So you can stop that with a good toothpaste that addresses bacteria and makes your mouth taste really great. All the Super Brew products are 50% off with free shipping. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 supplement, 50% off. Many other things. I can't go through the entire list. Take a look at what we have at InfoWarsStore.com. 50%, some of these things, 67% off of Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver. And free shipping store-wide. Okay, let's go back to the tax cuts here. Not a single Democrat voted to cut a single dollar from your taxes. Some of them, like Bernie Sanders, are saying, I can't vote for this. This is going to raise the deficit by $1.5 trillion over 10 years after they just raised the deficit, the cumulative debt, by $10 trillion over 8 years. Oh, they didn't say anything about that. Meanwhile, President Trump tweeted out the terrible individual mandate. He put in parentheses Obamacare. No, that's where I disagree with President Trump. We need to stop calling it Obamacare. I've made the mistake myself of calling it Obamacare for quite some time, even though the Supreme Court told us it was a tax. It was not health care. It was not health insurance. It was a tax. And so let's just call it the Obama tax. The terrible individual mandate of Obama tax has been repealed. And so, yes, it has. And the Republicans got it done without any help from the Democrats. And, you know, when we look at this, we just had the last couple of days, a guy from California, a congressman, his name is Ro Khanna, a 41-year-old Democrat out of Silicon Valley, got upset with Senator Marco Rubio. You know, a lot of people have talked about Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, and you just heard Bernie Sanders say, oh, Apple got this big tax break and it's awful. Well, why don't you complain about the fact that he is kowtowing to the Chinese communists and giving them everything that they want. And as I said before, you know, the Democrats want to say, oh, no, no, we can't have broad-based tax cuts on corporations and other structures of business because, you know, really that tax is passed through on the products anyway. So you're paying it. So they want to hide their taxes so that you pay, just like they hide the payroll taxes, the Social Security taxes. You don't see half of what the Social Security tax is on you. But if a business knows enough to stay in business, they know what their costs are. They know that they are paying a matching amount that you don't see. They did it that way on purpose. And they don't want you to see the fact that this whole net neutrality thing. So this Democrat goes out there. He attacks Marco Rubio because Rubio criticized Tim Cook, said he capitulated on human rights. He capitulated. He kowtowed to China on human rights. And he did. Tim Cook of Apple did. No question about it. So this guy from Silicon Valley comes out and says, shut up, you didn't vote for net neutrality. Well, net neutrality was nothing but a payoff to the corporations that pay the Democrats. It was an internal competition between the Googles, the Facebook, and the Netflix against some of the hardware companies, the internet service providers. I mean, that was one of the key things about that. So that's the way they do their corporate breaks, their corporate tax breaks. But let's take a look at what Chuckie Schumer says. Here's this clip. Let's run video clip number two.
It's fine to dislike. A new poll this morning from CNN found a majority of Americans against the bill. Why? The bill provides
Hold it right there. Hold it right there. Hold it right there. You know what? We'll tell you why. It's because of people like Chuckie Schumer and the mainstream media and CNN telling them how bad it was going to be for them, creating envy, like I said before. But look, when you see your after-tax income go up, and we'll talk about that in a moment, the tax breaks. If you see your income go up, and that's going to be the real test, then you're not going to think that it's a bad thing, even if they tell you that your neighbor is getting more back and you should hate it because of that. But let's continue on with what Chuckie Schumer has to say.
Hikes for middle-class families in this country and a Christmas gift to major corporations and billionaire investors. So let me be clear. This tax bill will be an anchor around the ankles of every Republican. If they haven't learned it yet, they're going to learn it next November. Republicans will rue the day they pass this bill, and the American people will never let them forget it.
Well, that'll be very interesting. We'll have to see about that.
Wage booster.
Let's leave it there at that point. As some of these people say, Christmas comes early for Trump with a tax win. Is it just for Trump? Is it just that he says, hey, I got something here, I want it? I mean, the real question is, are you going to see something? And if so, how soon will you see it? Well, USA Today says that although 47% of Americans disapprove and only 26% approve of the tax bills, according to a poll by Monmouth University, they said that nearly all these tax changes are going to take effect next year, which means, of course, that you're not going to see the difference when you start to do your tax return for 2017. The Democrats were successful in making sure that that didn't happen. The Democrats and the Uni Party, the GOP establishment, they delayed, so we didn't have anything retroactive to the beginning of the year. So you're not going to see any help on your 2017. However, they pointed out that you won't have to wait until April 2019 to get a tax break. What's going to happen is they're going to change the tax tables. That could happen as early as February. Once the IRS changes the tax tables, then your withholding is going to change based on your status. And so, yeah, you will see a difference, and you will see it at the beginning of this year. Could have seen it on this tax return that you're going to be putting out there. But, of course, people like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, who think that your money belongs to them, they made sure that they kept your money this year. They made sure that you didn't get a tax break this year. But come February, you are going to see a change in your take-home salary. And then we'll see what happens when it comes to November. If people see the economy picking up as it is picking up, if they see their take-home salary going up as it's going to go up, we'll see about that, Chuckie Schumer. We'll see who's going to rue the day. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Let's take a quick look at what really is in the bill. Of course, we still have the New York Times looking at it and saying, you know, feeding this envy type of thing. The tax cuts benefit the ultra-rich, but not the merely rich as much. In other words, let's take a look at the people who are billionaires versus the people who are simply millionaires. That's the way they spend this. Because, you know, only rich people benefit from any tax cut. That's the way the left is always going to spend this. It's been called a tax cut for the rich, a Christmas gift for the wealthy, and more. And that's true. A back of the envelope math shows in both dollar terms and so forth, the largest percentage cuts. No, actually, that's not true. In terms of percentage, that is not true. But they go on to say that you're probably asking how a tax plan that seems riddled with loopholes to benefit those who are well off can be raising the tax bill of the wealthy when we're told just the opposite. And of course, they also throw the Trump family in there, too. They say, well, here's why the people in New York that are very wealthy, that, of course, I guess they go to Starbucks with, the people New York Times. It's like, but I don't understand. Every tax bill is supposed to be good for the wealthy people, and you're making a lot of money on Wall Street. Why are you upset about that? Well, it's because of state and local taxes in New York and California, and they get to that. They say those states that have, it says, those making several thousand dollars to those making millions of dollars a year, if they have high state and local taxes, may see a higher tax bill. That's the essence of this. That is the essence of it. And that's the competition there. They're not going to get a free ride anymore on high state taxes in New York. And that just adds to their consternation and our schadenfreude. Our dark joy at seeing this happen. As Wall Street Journal points out, the middle class will get 23% of the tax cuts for individuals under the GOP bill. They take a look at it and they look at the total number of dollars. And what they're saying is, well, $61 billion, about a quarter of it, is going to go to the middle class. And then another quarter is going to go to the upper 1%. Then basically the rest of it is going to go to lowering business and corporate income tax. Well, when you look at this, that's not looking at it as a percentage, is it? You're going to expect that people who are even, you know, when you're looking at percentages, instead of having a progressive tax or regressive tax, how about just a proportional tax? You know, that's what people are talking about when they have a flat tax. That's why we can't have something that is just simple in terms of how we tax people. And I'm not a big advocate of most of these tax plans. I just want to see the government cut their spending. I want to see them get back the size of the Constitution, and we won't even have to have an income tax. But in the meantime, what we need to understand is that people who make more money are, even if you cut their taxes by a lower percentage, they are going to get a bigger dollar savings. That's just the way the math works out. And if you studied math while you're in school, instead of studying white privilege, you would understand that. The Washington Examiner points out 80% of taxpayers would get tax cuts next year under the GOP bill. 80% of taxpayers would get tax cuts next year under the GOP bill. So do you think, Chuckie Schumer, that the Republicans are going to rue the day if that is true? What they're saying is that they'll get a significant tax cut next year, these 80%. They say less than 5% would see a tax increase of more than $10. The nonpartisan think tank estimates a new report on the final tax bill that's headed for final passage this week. So this is a couple of days old. Things have not really changed since then. Of note, they say, though, the biggest tax cuts would not go to plutocrats, according to their analysis. Rather, they would be enjoyed by the merely very wealthy people earning between $300,000 and $700,000. So there's a lot of ways that you can use statistics to lie, isn't it? You know, statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics. Well, let's just take a look at the way some of this trickles down. Let's take a look at James here, as I got here. They got different individuals. Let's take a look at a guy who's makes $30,000. He's single, no kids. He's going to save $379, which is a 9% decrease in his tax liability. Another guy makes $52,000, single, but he has two kids. He's going to save about $1,892, a 36% reduction in his taxes. We got a couple married, $85,000, two kids. They save about $2,200, 20% savings. Another couple, $165,000, two kids. They save about the same amount as the couple making $85,000. Their taxes only go down by 8%. So is that wrong? Is that wrong? I mean, should they be upset? This guy says, wait a minute. Your taxes, you make less than I do, and your taxes went down more than mine, $30 more than mine. You saved $22.54. I only saved $22.24. How about if they're both happy that they don't send that money to Bernie Sanders, where he squanders it on inefficient pork programs or welfare benefits that for people that he doesn't know whether or not they deserve it, because we practice charity in Washington, D.C. as entitlements rather than people on the ground looking to see who needs the money and making sure those people who need it get more of it. No. They create an entitlement program that Bernie Sanders can run and use to get elected. All right, let's go up to the higher income levels. Let's take a look at two more. A couple with three kids, both of them are making are earners. They're making $325,000. They would save $9,600. See, the rich are getting richer. But it's a 13% cut. You know, we're looking at that as a percentage. Compare it to the guy that's making $52,000. He's single with two kids. He gets 36%. They get 13%. But because they have more money, they get a bigger dollar figure there. Or somebody's making $2 million. And with two kids, and they're married, they get a 3% tax cut. But look at it. It's a big dollar savings, almost $19,000. See, that's the way percentages work, kids. Even though it's 3%, the dollar amount is bigger because the base is bigger. That's just the way that it works. But they hate that, and they want to push envy on you. So here's Nancy Pelosi. Let's run a video clip number 3. GOP tax bill is morally obscene, she says. She calls it theft. No, taxation is theft, Nancy, and you've been the thief for a long time. Let's play Nancy Pelosi.
This GOP tax scam is simply theft, monumental, brazen theft from the American middle class and from every person who aspires to reach it. The GOP tax scam is not a vote for an investment in growth or jobs. It is a vote to install a permanent plutocracy in our nation. They'll be cheering that later. It does violence to the vision of our founders. It disrespects the sacrifice of our men and women in uniform who are a large part of our middle class.
Okay, that's enough for Nancy. Let's hold it right there. You know what? Does violence to the vision of our founders? Our founders fought a war, killed and died over a 3% tax on tea, Nancy. What do you think they'd do to you? What do you think they would do to you? That's the first time I've ever heard a Democrat say this tax bill is theft. And that part of it was absolutely right. It is theft. It is still theft. But it's less theft than Nancy Pelosi would have done. So they're only going to steal this big chunk over here. But yeah, every tax bill is theft. And the founders of this country knew how to deal with that. They knew how to deal with thieves like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and especially Bernie Sanders. These people who want to lord it over you, who think that everything that you own, everything that you earn, belongs to them. Here's another good example of these Democrats. Joe Manchin. Now, Joe Manchin is coming from West Virginia. He tried to move a lot to the right and move himself away from Hillary and Obama, who wanted to shut down an entire industry so they could reward their crony capitalist corporations, Solyndra and others. See, that's the way they practice it. They're more specific. They have targeted rewarding of the plutocrats that they do business with, because those plutocrats do kickbacks to them. So Joe Manchin saw the coal mines being shut down. It was a war on coal. He was going to bankrupt them. He's going to bankrupt anybody that used fossil fuels. Hillary Clinton was going to double down on that. So to win, Joe Manchin had to distance himself from those people. He even had to talk about the fact that he supported the Second Amendment and so forth. And so President Trump said to him, he said, I need more Democrats like you. He said to Trump, he said, you need more Democrats like me. You don't need Republicans. So Trump asked Manchin to support repealing Obamacare and then to cut taxes. It's like, you're going to support people being able to work for a living in West Virginia, and you want to be able to support them being able to protect themselves in West Virginia. How about if you give them the choice over their health care, or let them keep some of the money that they own? No, I'm not going to do that, he said. Not going to do that. He fought him on both of those. He said no to both of those. But you know who he's saying yes to? He's saying yes to Al Franken. This guy, Joe Manchin, like all these Democrats, okay? He's not just grabbing your money. He's grabbing Al Franken and telling Al Franken, don't go, don't leave, Al. We jumped to conclusions. We need people like Al Franken here. See, when you get these guys and they're part of the Democrats, then you can forget about the idea of moderate Democrats who respect any freedom. The only choice they'll give you is a choice to kill your child. We'll be right back.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We were just getting ready to talk about Gloria Allred, one of my favorite subjects here. And the article by Jonathan Turley, the lawyer who is spot on and I think very unbiased and honest in his opinions. And he's calling out Gloria Allred because now she is threatening defamation after putting out a forged yearbook in this Roy Moore election to take him down. Now, after that has been exposed, she is threatening defamation. Interesting how similar this is to what she did to President Trump and Summer Zervos, who is also her client. But as Jonathan Turley points out, after an appalling performance during the election that handed Roy Moore a desperately needed claim of misrepresentation by an alleged victim, and of course it handed him that claim, but then the mainstream media, including conservative mainstream media, completely buried that story of forgery. Completely buried it. Completely buried all of these, not just about the forgery. It is also about what all the former employees who worked at that restaurant said, tearing apart every single aspect of Gloria Allred's client's story, Beverly Young Nelson. And he says, I've been critical of the representation afforded by Gloria Allred and her daughter, Lisa Bloom, and I've got a story about her as well, and past cases, including the rapid calling of press conferences at the height of news cycles, including her handling of the Nelson allegations. And when you look at what they do, this is a pattern of behavior between Gloria Allred and her daughter, Lisa Bloom. He said she gave more exactly what he hoped to find, a basis for challenging the veracity of his accusers. Yeah, that story was taken apart numerous ways. We showed you even MSNBC, Katie Tour, asking her, well, did you ask your client if she actually saw Moore sign this? Because it was so obvious a forgery. She said, well, I didn't ask her. Well, why wouldn't you believe her? Why wouldn't you believe? She's a woman, of course. So there you go. Anyway, it was everything about it. But eventually, Beverly Young Nelson admitted that she had added notes after saying that he had written the entire thing. She comes back and says she had added notes beneath Roy Moore's signature. With Allred in November, points out Jonathan Turley, she knowingly misrepresented the facts about Moore writing all of the words. He wrote in my yearbook as follows, and then writes all the stuff out there. Allred, he said, sat there and didn't say a thing. She also remained silent about any knowledge during interviews in the days to come without confirming forgery or denying it. The interviews with Allred were eagerly played by Moore supporters. Well, why wouldn't they be? It showed her to be an absolute liar. Now she is threatening defamation, demanding that Nelson be given back her reputation. The same thing she did with Summer Zervos. Same thing. Remember, Summer Zervos came out at the last minute after the Access Hollywood tape was released by NBC and the Bushes. And that created a big stir with Donald Trump. That was a basis for all the women saying he needs to be removed from the ballot. Paul Ryan was saying he needed to be removed from the ballot. Everybody, basically, except for the conservatives, the Freedom Caucus, were calling for him to step down, just as they did Roy Moore. And then Gloria Allred comes in with a kill. Has Summer Zervos, somebody who had been on Trump's show, and had written him an email in the summer asking for him to come by and plug her new business. And she didn't get a response. And so she decided, evidently, that she would get even and came out with these charges, which he denied. And then as the email surfaced, it fell apart, just as it did in this case with Roy Moore. But then at the beginning of the year, Gloria Allred began a defamation lawsuit against President Trump for showing how Summer Zervos was lying. And now she's going to do the same thing with Roy Moore. After she represents a client, after she puts forth lies about somebody, and after those lies are exposed, then she sues for defamation. That's Gloria Allred. We'll tell you when we come back what her daughter, Lisa Bloom, did. You won't believe that either. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to have Matt Shea, a Washington State representative, who is going to have more information about corruption within the BLM that was released by a whistleblower there. And this is not simply about that one particular incident, the Bundy trial. This has implications for land use throughout the country. But it also has implications for you, even if you aren't a rancher, a farmer, a miner, a logger, This is about due process and an honest criminal investigation. It's about the abuse of political power, how our bureaucracies have turned into enterprises because power corrupts. Our founders knew that. That's why they created a divided government. And we talked about this to some degree on Friday with Sherry Duvalle, who broke the news with Matt Shea. We have an update from Matt Shea today. And it was interesting because all that came out on the week and the day that we had the anniversary of the Bill of Rights. Shows you just how dead the Bill of Rights is. In the last segment, I was talking about Gloria Allred and how Jonathan Turley, a lawyer who has a very good legal blog, was absolutely appalled at what Gloria Allred had done during the Moore campaign. The evasive interviews, knowingly misrepresenting the facts, handing, he said, this get-out-of-jail card to Roy Moore on a silver platter. But, of course, that was buried by the mainstream media, including the conservative media. Except for here and on Breitbart, nobody talked about it. InfoWars, Breitbart, everybody at Fox News, they continued to sell this idea that, oh, there were nine women charging Roy Moore. Absolute lie. And even President Trump didn't tweet about the fake forged yearbook and the pushback by the women there. And yet it's Gloria Allred who used this to defame Roy Moore, who is now saying she is going to start a defamation lawsuit. And she did the same thing with President Trump, with Summer Zervos. It was exposed that she was still begging President Trump to come by, and she looked like a woman scorned. She had asked him to come by and promote her business in the summer, and then when he didn't, they said they didn't even see the email. But then she goes to Gloria Allred to try to get even. That's what it looked like. And when that was exposed, now Gloria Allred is saying she's going to have, she started a defamation lawsuit against President Trump in January because he had exposed the lie of her clients and the lie of Gloria Allred. And so now she's done it again with Moore. And now she's saying she's going to have a defamation action against Judge Moore because she lied about him. She defamed him, so she's going to sue him, same as she did with President Trump. And then her daughter, Lisa Bloom, The Hill is reporting, exclusive, prominent lawyer sought donor cash for two Trump accusers. This is Gloria Allred's daughter, Lisa Bloom, looks exactly like her and acts exactly like her. A well-known women's rights lawyer, says The Hill, sought to arrange compensation from donors and tabloid media outlets for women who made or considered making sexual misconduct allegations against Trump during the final months of the presidential race, according to documents and interviews. So that adds even more interest to the Summer Zervos story, doesn't it? They're out there shopping around for people, offering cash for people. This is coming from The Hill. This is coming from The Hill. Lisa Bloom's efforts included offering to sell alleged victims' stories to TV outlets in return for a commission for herself, arranging a donor to pay off one Trump accuser's mortgage, attempting to secure a six-figure payment for another woman who ultimately declined to come forward after being offered as much as $750,000. These clients told The Hill, they said the women's accounts were chronicled in contemporaneous contractual documents, emails, text messages, reviewed by The Hill. They've got the documents. This is not an anonymous accusation. The Hill has seen the documents where Lisa Bloom, probably on behalf of her mother, Gloria Allred, who eventually did get a woman to come forward, were doing this for political purposes. As I said before, they use the same tactics over and over again. That's why I don't believe this election. You look at this election, you look at how badly the Republicans did not want to have Roy Moore in there. That should concern you, whether or not you like Roy Moore or not. That kind of corruption, be able to rig elections by the Democrats and the Republicans, to be able to purge the records even before all the votes are counted. It's very close. It's only 1.5%. If it gets down to 0.5%, that automatically triggers a recount. And there are a lot of military votes that haven't been counted. They did count all the felons that the Democrats registered in prison, many of them, and bragged about that openly. But not the military, who did absentee ballots. Bloom, of course, defended Harvey Weinstein. So we look at what Gloria Allred is doing. We look at what her daughter Lisa Bloom is doing. And then we'll take a look at what Saturday Night Live did this last weekend. We got Omarosa, who said, this is a CNN personal vendetta. This is a fake news attack. I wasn't fired. I wasn't drugged from the White House. They didn't drag me out of the place. I left. But then Saturday Night Live and NBC double down on it. They have a skit where they act out CNN's fake news. It's very, very interesting the way they've got this full spectrum propaganda going on. So what they do is they have a black woman and they have President Trump in the Oval Office and she's outside one of the windows banging on it. Let me back in. Let me back in. And presumably dragging them out. I've just seen the still pictures of it. I don't really watch any of these Alec Baldwin Saturday Night. I don't watch anything on Saturday Night Live anymore. But here's what Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, had to say about all of these personal attacks that she's getting, just as Omarosa is getting these personal attacks. Here's Sarah Sanders.
Look, this was a president who was elected by the forgotten men and women of this country, and a lot of liberals have contempt for those people, whether they're men, whether they're women, and they want to attack us. I think that it's a great reminder of why this president was elected. We're here to do a job. We're here to get big things done. That's what we're focused on. And if they want to focus on petty attacks, that's fine. Let them have at it. While they're doing that, we're going to get tax cuts passed in this country. We're going to continue to grow the economy, continue to create jobs, 2 million new jobs since this president came into office, and I'm sure a lot of those are going to women. And maybe we'll get to replace some of those female journalists out there that don't like us very much at some point. But the bottom line is, this is a president who's focused on getting things done, focused on getting things done for the men and women that, frankly, a lot of the liberal elites in this country don't like, have contempt for, and he's focused on empowering women, and he is doing that in the way he puts people in place in his administration. And I think it's sad that they're attacking a lot of us while claiming to champion women's causes and women's issues.
And so it's people like Chelsea Handler, who does ad hominem attacks on Sarah Sanders because she doesn't have anything to say. They lost. They don't like that. So they're going to throw a temper tantrum. They're going to call you every name in the book. They're going to project their lifestyle onto you, Chelsea Handler. But that's what we're seeing. And we saw that before. We saw that with Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill. After coming after Clarence Thomas, trying to scupper his nomination to the Supreme Court, it wasn't but about 2 years later, she was defending Bill Clinton against charges of rape and sexual assault. She wasn't there for the women. It was purely political. The same thing that we're seeing with CNN, same thing we're seeing with Saturday Night Live, same thing we're seeing with Twitter, as we see them allowing racially motivated death threats, even more of them, against the FCC chair. This is an article from Jerome Corsi. And he quoted Commissioner Pai saying, when it comes to free and open internet, Twitter is part of the problem. See, Twitter is the problem. It isn't the rules. Have you noticed that the internet went down now because we're not going to regulate it like a public utility? As Dr. Jerome Corsi pointed out when I interviewed him on Friday, the appropriate place to handle unfair trade practices is the FTC, not the FCC. The FCC was there to allocate frequency spectrum for radio stations, for television stations, to have an auction, so forth. They should never be involved in content. The FTC should be involved in content about the monopolistic actions of Google, of Twitter, and others. As Pai went on to say, the company has a viewpoint. It uses that viewpoint to discriminate. Conduct is one thing, but it isn't fighting for an open internet. So will they shut down these people who are making death threats against Commissioner Pai? I don't think so. But today begins the day that they're going to start purging those that they call alt-right. And, of course, they will determine whether you are alt-right or not. And they will look at what you do outside of Twitter to determine whether or not they're going to censor you. Yeah, that's net neutrality, support, right? On this Monday, December the 18th, 2017, part of our 34-hour live broadcast. We are in now our second hour. We're going to be talking to Washington State Representative Matt Shea. He has broken some information from a whistleblower that is very important about corruption within the BLM. But understand that this is a pattern for corruption throughout the federal government. This is something that has wide-reaching consequences for a lot of people in Western states, but it is something that affects you even if you are not somebody who makes their living with property rights off of the land, even if you don't have surface rights or mining rights or water rights or logging rights or whatever, even if you have just property rights, they're coming for that as well. And they're going to not give you due process, an honest trial, if they want to get you badly enough. And that's what we're seeing here in this trial. So we've got a recap as well as some new information from Matt Shea. Before we do, real quickly, I want to let you know about the sales that we have as part of this 34-hour broadcast. Massive Christmas savings. We have things like Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, Survival Shield, X2 Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, Prostaguard, all of those, 50% off, as well as a couple of new products. We have Cell Force and Alpha Power, both of those at an introductory price that is 50% off. Take a look at the massive sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Many things that are very popular are also on sale, like Brain Force, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver formula, and InfoWars Life Select Survival Food, with a shelf life of 25 years, made in the U.S., non-GMO, and resealable after you open it for a short period of time. So take a look at the massive sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, part of our massive Christmas savings. And we thank you for your support. All right, let's go to Matt Shea. You can find Matt on Twitter at Rep Matt, that's two T's, Shea, S-H-E-A. And Matt has represented the 4th Legislative District in Spokane Valley, Washington. We've had him on the show many times talking about issues, and he has some amazing information from a BLM whistleblower. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Now, last week we had Sherry Duvalli with Redoubt News. She talked about the fact that there was going to be everybody believed it was going to be a mistrial, as the judge let the jury off and said, you can go until December the 20th. You're not going to be needed till then, if then, after she had a private meeting with all the different attorneys. And there had been other instances prior to that where they found that the BLM had been lying about things that had happened there, had been concealing evidence there that would show the innocence of the Bundys and others. Then it escalated to talk of maybe an all-out dismissal with prejudice. So it would not be subject to another trial at some point, that this is so broad and so deep, this corruption and concealment, that it might cause a dismissal entirely with prejudice of all the charges brought against people associated with the Bunkerville standoff. So if you can kind of give us a quick recap and then get into the new breaking news that has come out about this BLM whistleblower. So tell us, give us a little bit of a recap of what came out towards the end of last week, and then give us the new information that came out this weekend.
Absolutely. So last week, an anonymous source sent me information from a whistleblower, Special Agent Larry Wooten. And Larry Wooten, just so your audience knows and understands, was the lead investigator for the Bundy case. So this is not, some disgruntled employee. He has a very stellar record, and he was the lead investigator. So this is coming from somebody who was in a position to investigate the facts of this case, to investigate the veracity of the witnesses, investigate the veracity of the process by which they followed for this investigation. And what he came out with were some very damning allegations in a communication to the National Criminal Discovery Coordinator. And I would like to just highlight probably one of the most egregious quotes I have ever read in any sort of investigation over the last 15 years. Quote, time after time, I was told a former BLM special agent loves misconduct. I was told by BLM law enforcement supervisors that he had a kill book. Now, this is Special Agent Wooten's words, not mine. A kill book as a trophy and, in essence, bragging about getting three individuals in Utah to commit suicide. That is one of the most startling quotes I have ever read. And in our capacity as legislators, in our oversight capacity of agencies, and in taking an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Washington, by the way, the BLM has 435,000 acres that it manages, not owns, manages in the state of Washington. And I believe that this quote alone, I mean, there's much more in this original correspondence from Special Agent Wooten. But this quote alone warrants an investigation, not only by Congress, but by Secretary Zinke and the Trump administration. I'm sure they were blindsided by this as much as I was when I received the information. But needless to say, there needs to be some significant action taken in this. And this goes a long way, actually, to explain why Trump has been facing so much resistance draining the swamp, because
that's right.
These folks tried to cover it up internally.
That's right. And as I was saying earlier in the program, we see now mainstream media coming in and saying, look, we've got ISIS is being supplied from the United States. And we've been saying for a long time, yeah, it was people involved in the CIA and so forth that were involved in this. They have got their necks in the noose if we find out they were supplying ISIS. I mean, they become terrorists themselves. So when you look at a BLM agent who's got a kill list of people that he's proud that he took out, this is something that is absolutely amazing for most Americans to think about, that this is a bureau that was set up to manage land. And yet they've turned into this fully militarized law enforcement agency that is out there with a kill list. This is the way that government, I think, and overall, that's why I think this is important for everybody to understand, whether or not they have a dog in this specific fight. This is something that is happening to our government throughout every different agency. All these different bureaucracies have basically taken on this kind of militarized approach. We have the Department of Education with a SWAT team, and they've come after in the past. They've come after people who are behind on their loans. So this type of action here at the BLM was exactly why we started reporting on this, because we're afraid it was going to turn into another Waco or Ruby Ridge. And in fact, they were the aggressors here. And that was, they had turned this narrative on its head to try to keep the Bundy family and others locked up without bail for nearly 2 years, saying they were the aggressors, they were dangerous, they needed to be kept in jail. And now we find out that it was actually the BLM.
Well, when the Wall Street Journal says and comes out with a headline that the government provoked, not the Bundys, but the government provoked this, I think that destroys completely the narrative or this idea that these cattle ranchers in the West are somehow domestic terrorists. I think it just destroys it completely. And the point behind all of this is very important. First, no one is above the law, and that includes the servants of the people. And we want to be able to monitor those things which we have created. And this idea that people are guilty until proven innocent, the idea that these bureaucrats are not servants of the people really needs to be flipped on its head. And I understand, too, that there was a video put out by Secretary Zinke addressing the culture within the BLM and that it needed to be changed. I think that's an understatement when yeah. I received this communication.
Yeah. All right, we've got to take a quick break, Matt. We're going to come back with Matt Shea, Washington State Representative, who bravely came out with this whistleblower letter. And we're glad that the whistleblower is blowing the whistle on this. And we're going to have more specifics about this as well as new information. Stay with us.
And now, live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and I'm talking to Matt Shea, a Washington State representative, who has gone public with a whistleblower's letter exposing very criminal action at the Bureau of Land Management. And he was just talking about Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke and putting out some mild criticism of the BLM. We have to understand that this goes beyond what has been talked about so far in the Trump administration. And we just had an article come out on the Hill where he reprimanded the superintendent of the Joshua Tree National Park for putting out some climate change tweets. Well, what that does is that shows a political bias of these individuals, and that's part of what's happening in Washington in general. But the Trump administration needs to understand that there are a lot of people in Washington, as well as now in the BLM, this particular case, who have committed very serious crimes, and they will do anything to keep not just their politics in place and in power, but to cover up these crimes that they have committed. That's the larger context of this. So I want to go back to Representative Matt Shea, and Matt, give us some of the details of what had happened there with BLM, specifically under the special agent in charge, Dan Love, who was removed from the case, and they kept all talk about what he had done, the criminal actions that he had done, as well as what the BLM had done. That was off limits. That was put in there. This is part of a conspiracy. It's more than just one rogue agent involved here, because the people who are running the prosecution were also the ones who came after this whistleblower who exposed the criminal actions of Dan Love, who suppressed evidence that would have shown a different story than the government was trying to put out there about the Bunkerville standoff.
Well, besides the alleged kill book that Special Agent Wooten references, you have also this allegation that there was an arrest tracking wall and that Eric Parker and Cliven Bundy's picture were up on this arrest tracking wall with huge red X's through their face and body. Again, very startling that in America today you would have what looks like something that pretends harm to those two individuals.
Do they have a picture of Lavoie Finicum like that with a red X to it?
They did not that I know of, but we don't have all the information in that case either. And I hope that more whistleblowers that see this information being exposed come forward with that type of insider knowledge so that these folks can be held accountable. I mean, they need to be held accountable. And it wasn't just the kill book. It wasn't just these red X's, but there's also allegations of sexual misconduct against Special Agent in Charge Dan Love, including that he emailed pictures of his girlfriend's genitalia and his own excrement, which is just something I don't even know how somebody gets to a point where they would do that, but that he did that to fellow employees. There's also allegations that exculpatory evidence or evidence that tended to help the defense was withheld. And then lastly, there is a confirmation in this correspondence by Special Agent Wooten that snipers were indeed deployed to the Bundy Ranch and not only were in overwatch positions, but there were also other sniper teams that were ready to be deployed in the event that they needed to become even more aggressive. Now, there's a simple principle there that a sniper rifle is not due process. I think that's probably one of the most visible things that we've seen in this entire incident that is most alarming, at least to me and many other Americans.
You know, when we were there and after the standoff stopped, they said, we're going to remove all the BLM agents and all these other people there. It was a convoy of cars that just went on and on and on. We covered it live. And it was like about 45 minutes. They're driving cars of people. They had an actual army. There wasn't a virtual army. It was an actual army. And we knew that they had snipers out there that were, training. We had binoculars to take a look at these people as well. So this is reported, but it wasn't believed until we had an honest whistleblower in the BLM, Larry Wooten, who blew the whistle on this. And their response was for the U.S. attorney in charge there, Steve Myrie, to remove him.
Yes, and Special Agent Wooten very clearly says in this communication that not only was he rewarded for his work inside the BLM and he was acknowledged as one of the best investigators, but again, he was picked to be the lead investigator on one of the most high-profile cases the BLM has ever had to handle. So the idea that he's some sort of a disgruntled employee or he was incompetent, that just kind of goes out the window with that. And that's why I also believe that this second memorandum that I'm going to be talking with you here in a moment about is so important because it not only backs it up, but it highlights many of the things that we believe were true inside the BLM. And as you alluded to earlier, probably true within a lot of other federal agencies as well.
You know, it's not just Larry Wooten, who was the special agent in charge of this investigation. But I remember there was a story out of a Utah paper because Dan Love had been given jurisdiction. He was a special agent in charge of two states, Nevada and Utah. And there were local press accounts talking about what had happened there. And they interviewed the special agent in charge of Arizona. And so he was at the same level as Dan Love. And he said when he got called in on this Bundy thing, he said, I couldn't believe that this is what they were doing. Is, are you trying to provoke a conflict? This makes absolutely no sense what you're doing here. Arming up, creating an army there, getting very aggressive with people. So it was another special agent at his level. And then here's the guy who has a long honored career with the BLM, appointed to investigate this, who then becomes a whistleblower. But then he is removed by the Department of Justice.
Right. It smacks of a cover-up. And the fact that it's not just one or two people, that there have been multiple allegations involved in here, especially in regards to Special Agent in Charge Love, again, warrants at the very least a congressional investigation and an investigation by Secretary Zinke. I believe that the other part of this, the second memorandum that is here, really highlights some of the things that are endemic to.
Yeah, let's get into some of the specifics of this second memorandum that came out over the weekend.
Right. So this is a memorandum by Assistant Special Agent in Charge Kent Kleeman. And I want to read four quotes from it, and then we can kind of take them in order if you'd like. But sure, it's important to quote these because this was October 14, 2016. Special Agent Wooten made some notes in preparation for a conference call, and it was, quote, critical vulnerabilities, end quote, of the government's case against the Bundys. And here are these so-called critical vulnerabilities. I think that really what it is a self-admission of the problems inside the federal government right now, not just in the BLM. Quote, BLM was heavy-handed, even cruel, in the enforcement of the court order, end quote. Quote, BLM lacked law enforcement authority in their case, end quote. Quote, BLM is a poor manager of the resources such as grazing. So just on that one, if they can't even perform the purpose for which they were created, why do they exist? And then the last quote, quote, Dan Love had a personal agenda and is immoral. And then in parentheses, jury appeal, in parentheses, end quote. This brings up, you know, a ton of questions, especially, you know, that the BLM was heavy-handed or even cruel. I mean, was that in reference to the fact that cattle were not rounded up, that Clive and Bundy's bulls were shot, which seems to be a clear effort to destroy his herd? The fact that there was a mass grave that some of the cattle were put in, the fact that there was deployment of snipers, that there was a First Amendment zone, or that people were tasered and thrown to the ground? I mean, this is a special agent, again, a lead investigator, calling into question the very reason that all of this began. And I think,
and there were people who believed that was being done punitively, that they were killing the cattle. That's why they were out there. That's why they had that confrontation with them. They were protesting them. And that's why they got out there and threw Clive and Bundy's sister to the ground, a cancer survivor. They came up behind this woman, grabbed her and threw her to the ground. But it wasn't even just them. They would get after anybody that was in that area during that period of time. They had some people who were out. They were hiking or they were bicycling. They were attacked. And I remember when that happened, we all went down there to see what had happened. They were scraped up, bruised up. We reported on that at the time. The BLM was acting like heavy-handed, militarized thugs to anyone who was there in that area.
Right. And it's very interesting, too, that, you know, you have folks that are harassed in a right-of-way. You know, America is a First Amendment zone. So the idea that you put a First Amendment zone there is just ridiculous.
And so, that got even the governor there upset. Sandoval was upset when they put that up there as an area. And they had a nice printed sign. Somebody put up a hand-printed sign and said the First Amendment is not an area. You don't get to do that. We're going to be right back with Matt Shea, Representative of Washington. We have more details about this. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
When the world falls in love, every song you hear seems to say,
welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Matt Shea.
Christmas.
I guess you could look at it as a Merry Christmas for the Bundy family, as the crimes of the BLM and the Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney Steve Myrie, are now being exposed by an honest individual, a whistleblower inside the BLM. Everything that the government does now is shrouded in secrecy to us. The only way that we find out about what is happening is if we have an honest agent inside who will get this information out to us. That's the only way that we find out anymore. That's why they're so concerned about whistleblowers trying to shut things down. And, of course, the honest agent in this case is BLM Special Agent Larry Wooten. This is a memo that Matt Shea obtained that he's breaking down what happened with it. And of course, it was a memo written about Larry Wooten by someone who was investigating it with the BLM, Clint Clayman. And what it shows here is not only criminal actions by the special agent in charge, Dan Love, and others, but a cover-up of those criminal actions by U.S. Attorney Steve Myrie, who was doing the prosecution. And of course, Larry Wooten had been put in charge of the investigative team for the BLM. So he looks at this, says, wait a minute, it looks like exculpatory evidence. In other words, evidence that would have shown the Bundy family to be innocent of these charges has been withheld and covered up. And so the response, Matt, of the U.S. attorney is to say to Kent Clayman, go get that information from him, find out what he knows, and shut it down.
There's a very specific quote in Wooten's communication that I think is just probably the most damning statement about specifically Stephen Myrie. Quote, although the U.S. Attorney's Office was generally aware of former BLM Special Agent in Charge Dan Love's misconduct and likely civil rights and excessive force issues. The lead prosecutor, currently the acting Nevada United States Attorney Stephen Myrie, adopted an attitude of don't ask, don't tell. Again, a very serious allegation here. And I want to frame this, too, that this is not the first time these types of allegations have happened in the Western United States. You had the very famous Wayne Hage case where Robert C. Jones, a federal district court judge, in a 104-page opinion, accused the BLM and Forest Service of extortion, racketeering, and mail fraud. I mean, you have a U.S. district court judge accusing a government agency of this. And again, yes, it seems like there's not a lot happening out of this, and that's why we're bringing this forward.
You know, when I look at this memo here, this is a report coming from Agent Kent Klayman. He says, at the conclusion of this meeting, which he's writing about the meeting that he had with Wooten, he says, I told Wooten that he has insider knowledge about an ongoing criminal investigation he has now removed from the case. He had insider knowledge because he was doing the investigation, and he wasn't going to go along with the government's lying narrative about this. So they remove him from the case. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what is going on with this. And of course, if we go back and we look at the history of Dan Love, it's not his first rodeo either. He'd been involved, as you pointed out, in some of these things in his kill book, people that had committed suicide because of the pressure, the intimidation, the action of Dan Love. One of them was a doctor who had some artifacts, and Dan Love was later found, you know, this is a doctor who was working in a small community, not making any money, serving the community, but he hounded him to death, and then Dan Love was found to have these same artifacts or some even more valuable that he was handing out as favors or keeping on his desk, that type of thing. Also, the issues that he had at the festival there, the Burning Man in the desert, the ways that he had intimidated people. But tell us specifically about some of these things, like kick Clive and Bundy in the teeth, these kinds of comments that were coming out that they wanted to cover up, showing that the BLM was an aggressor in this, but still keeping Clive and Bundy in jail for nearly 2 years.
Well, I think there's a couple very important points. The first is that Special Agent Wooten very specifically says that Dr. Red, who you just talked about, in Operation Cerberus, that was mentioned in Dan Love's kill book. That's exactly what Special Agent Wooten says. And not just the talk of him being in the kill book, but also that Dan Love was widely reported to have been removed because he didn't enter those artifacts taken from the Red home into evidence properly, instead handed them out, as you said. There's also this interesting part of the memo of what's not said. You don't have a refutation of all of these allegations of, you know, kick Clive and Bundy in the teeth, you know, making fun of Mormons, all of these types of things that are alleged in Wooten's communication. None of that is refuted in this second memo. It's essentially about trying to discredit Special Agent Wooten to a certain extent by saying that, no, actually all evidence was indeed released. Well, if that's true, how come a lot of us are just seeing this for the first time? How come these hearings have been sealed and this hasn't been allowed to go public? There's just a lot more questions that have been raised than answered out of this whole thing.
What is the situation with Special Agent Wooten now? Is he still working for the BLM? Did they just remove him from this case, or is he out of the BLM?
It looks like he was just removed from this case and he's still working for the BLM. We're trying to confirm this, but, you know, once again, this is very difficult to confirm. It only seems like we get information through whistleblowers, as you said earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing to see this kind of stuff happen. And as you're pointing out before, going through these 4 points, that were the key things, that they were heavy-handed, even cruel in the enforcement of the order, and that Dan Love had a personal agenda and was immoral. Actually, it was a very sadistic. I mean, what comes across in all of this is not only a personal agenda, but the fact that he was sadistically cruel in all of this as well.
Yes, and that there was this allegation of just widespread behavior inside the BLM law enforcement arm's office to make fun of the people they were investigating, to put their pictures that were altered up around the office, making fun of them. And by the way, just, you know, as a practicing attorney myself, you know, with people that are going to be testifying as witnesses and really beginning to alter or at least attempt to shade their testimony by putting these things up around the office, I mean, that's just a completely separate issue all unto itself. And if the attorney general's office knew about this, which Special Agent Wooten is saying they did know about this, then not only are we talking about BLM, but we're talking about the Department of Justice as well. And it's a very serious allegation among attorneys to withhold exculpatory evidence. So, you know, again, I think there needs to be an investigation, not just in BLM, but also it appears with the DOJ.
Yeah, it's very widespread. I mean, I've seen the same thing happen with the Silk Road case. Ross Ulbricht, who's now serving three life sentences for operating a website. And one of the things that happened there was a couple of government agents who got in there and got the keys to the website and were able to steal nearly $1 million. Again, in that trial, they were forbidden from talking about those criminal agents, which would have been exculpatory for him, saying, you know, who had the money? Who did this? And these guys who are investigating this were acting as criminals. Same thing happening with the BLM case and the Bundys. You've got a criminal special agent in charge, and they say, you will not mention Dan Love. You will not mention the BLM, even when it was an obvious issue in previous trials. And the same judge who has now dismissed the jury temporarily. In a situation where they were asking these people who were there filming, they said, were you afraid? And they said, oh, yes, I was very afraid, trying to imply that it was the protesters that they were afraid of when they were hiding behind a concrete wall. And the defense attorney says, well, who were you afraid of? Stop. You can't ask that question. I mean, that's the way they rigged this from the Department of Justice through the judge, through all these people. But I think it's now gotten so big that this judge doesn't believe that she can cover for them anymore.
Well, specifically, Special Agent Wooten mentions Dave Bundy's iPad, which is probably the biggest example of where, with you know, exculpatory evidence that he's alleging was withheld. Dave Bundy's iPad is alleged to have had on it, and this is Special Agent Wooten's words, evidence of excessive use of force and also potential civil rights violations. So the fact that that hasn't been returned to Dave Bundy, the fact that that was withheld, you know, it's just one example of a potential massive breach of trust here. And again, if we see this case dismissed, I believe that this is a huge reason why.
Well, it's amazing to find this out and really to appreciate you going public with this information, Matt. And again, Matt is a state legislator from Washington State. You can find him on Twitter at Rep. Matt Shea. Also, you can find VoteShea.com. We've got about a minute left. Give us your final comments, Matt.
Well, you know, my final comments with all of this, I think I just leave you with this idea that no one is above the law. And, you know, this isn't the first time. This is a pattern of behavior, if not a culture, within the Bureau of Land Management. And it's within the power of the Trump administration to clean this mess up. And that's right. I know he has been trying to clean this mess up and has been resisted at every turn. This, I think, gives the Trump administration the evidence they need to, if not investigate only, to fire some of these bad actors inside the BLM and maybe even the Department of Justice.
I agree. And this is something that we see is metastasized to many bureaucracies, and they're even coming after President Trump in the same way. Same pattern of behavior that we see. And it is pervasive, and it has to be addressed. Thank you so much for joining us. Matt Shea, we'll be right back.
Waging war on corruption, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You just heard former FBI Assistant Director James Kallstrom speaking to Fox Business News' Stuart Varney. They don't control Fox Business News as closely as they do the other part of Fox. But he told him in that interview, he said, patriots in the FBI will soon step forward and expose the cabal. As I pointed out to you before, we have those who have been following this in the House have said they believe there's a criminal conspiracy in the Justice Department, the FBI, that's at the top. They're going to be working on this as well. But it's going to also take people inside exposing these lies. And I think somebody will come forward. Somebody who is honest, like the whistleblower at the BLM who blew that Bundy case wide open. Now, McCabe has been testifying before a committee 8 hours yesterday, more scheduled today. He dodged questions, reports Zero Hedge, dodged questions on the Trump-Russia dossier. That's the dirty dossier, or the filthy fiction, as I call it. They probably had to go to Harvey Weinstein to get a for assistance in writing that piece of trash. But they said, and this is interesting, They said that his testimony contained numerous conflicts with the testimony of previous witnesses. Oh, but we can't say that McCabe was lying because he's a very powerful guy in the FBI. And the FBI can never be the FIB, can they? Except when they are. And we've seen this happen numerous times, haven't we? They said, Trey Gowdy said, yeah, it's kind of hard to know who's telling us the truth. That wasn't Trey Gowdy. He was spearheading the investigation. But one House investigator said that. Yeah, it's kind of hard to know who's telling us the truth. I think I know who the players are by now. I think I know who has credibility and who doesn't. I would kind of go not with the guy who was getting a lot of money from Clinton and who also had a lot of connections to Russia himself. You know, a True Pundit has reported, and I've got the report here somewhere, but I don't know where it is at the moment. Just from memory, True Pundit, I'll get that for you and let you know what's going on with that in the later in the hour. But they point out that it is McCabe himself who has Russian connections to billionaires. He claimed he could not recall whether or not the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton campaign, and the DNC funded the report despite the alleged existence of documents which McCabe signed, establishing his knowledge of its financing and its provenance. So you're going to find a whistleblower, let's hope, that can get that stuff if they haven't destroyed it by now. They're a little bit more clever about this stuff. So hopefully, if this hasn't been destroyed, you're going to find that document. It's going to surface. That will blow it wide open because this guy just gave us multiple versions. But of course, Comey can do that. McCabe can do that. That isn't a problem. But if they casually ask you a question about something, even if it isn't a formal deposition or hearing, even if you're not sworn in testimony, they will send you to jail for lying to the FIB. Let's play the clip from Jim Jordan because he says everything in this points to an orchestrated plan within the Department of Justice and the FBI to prevent Trump from becoming or staying president. Here's this clip.
States. I think it's amazing, in spite of the fact that the Democrats were against him, the Republican establishment was against him, the mainstream press was against him, and now I believe the FBI and the Justice Department were against him. The American people said that's still the guy we want to be the next president. But everything points to, from when we learned several weeks ago that they paid for the dossier, to the fact I believe that dossier, that fake dossier, was used as the basis to get warrants, to now what we've learned about Peter Strzok and Bruce Ohr and the FBI and the Justice Department respectively. Everything points to the fact that there was an orchestrated plan to try to prevent Donald Trump from being the next president of the United States.
All right. So we're going to be following that. Again, I've got some more information that I'll find in my stack of papers here about what McCabe did. Coming up in the next segment, I'm going to play you a special report I did on the 100th anniversary of the creation of the Federal Reserve. You want to talk about a criminal conspiracy? You want to talk about manipulating the public and the Congress? That is Exhibit A. And so we have an interesting thing about the creation of the Federal Reserve. The 104th anniversary is coming up on Saturday. We're not going to be here on Saturday, so we're going to play it a little bit early for you. And we're going to show you the similarity between it and It's a Wonderful Lie.
You found it. It's the real. InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. This Saturday is the 104th anniversary of the creation of the Federal Reserve. You want a criminal conspiracy? We've been talking about what's going on in the Bundy trial, what's going on with the Russian investigation. Well, here's the mother of all criminal conspiracies, the creation of the Federal Reserve, and how much it's like It's a Wonderful Life. I call it It's a Wonderful Lie.
Over the last 100 years, the Federal Reserve has created bubbles and burst them, enslaved us with debt, and destroyed our purchasing power through inflation. Yes, it's been a wonderful lie for the bankers. There are striking parallels in Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life to the lies and tricks that real bankers used to create the Federal Reserve. Human nature doesn't change, and the greedy elite of 1913 and 2013 look and act a lot like Potter, the banker in the movie. And many Americans are left like George Bailey, staring into the abyss as their dreams collapse and they face financial ruin. Do we live in a country that looks a lot more like Pottersville than Bedford Falls? What does Frank Capra's film show us about how we got here and how we can get out? When the Federal Reserve was created 2 days before Christmas 100 years ago, it was a culmination of 6 years of fraud, fear, and manipulation.
I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
The panic of 1907 was used to shape public support for the Fed. The panic was triggered by rumors that two major banks were about to become insolvent, just as we see in the movie.
George, there is a rumor around town that you've closed your doors. Is that true? I am going all out to help in this crisis. I have just guaranteed the bank sufficient funds to meet their needs. They will close up for a week and then reopen.
Just took over the bank.
I may lose a fortune, but I am willing to guarantee your people, too. Just tell them to bring their shares over here, and I will pay 50 cents on the dollar.
Oh, you never miss a trick, do you, Potter?
Unfortunately, J.P. Morgan got away with the deception and was able to shut down competitors and snapped up assets at fire sale prices.
Take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the building and loan. I saved all the rest.
Yes, well, most people say you stole all the rest.
The envious ones say that, George. The suckers.
Charles Lindbergh Sr. warned people at the time of the creation of the Federal Reserve that it would not stop boom and bust cycles, but would actually create them in order to benefit its private owners. Here's what he said. To cause high prices, all the Federal Reserve Board will do will be to lower the rediscount rate, producing an expansion of credit and a rising stock market. Then, when businessmen are adjusted to these conditions, it can check prosperity in mid-career by arbitrarily raising the rate of interest. It can cause a pendulum of rising and falling market to swing gently back and forth, or cause violent fluctuations by a greater rate variation. And in either case, it will possess inside information as to the financial conditions and advanced knowledge of the coming change, either up or down. This is the strangest, most dangerous advantage ever placed in the hands of a special privileged class by any government that ever existed. The system is private, conducted for the sole purpose of obtaining the greatest possible profits from the use of other people's money. They know in advance when to create panics to their advantage, and they know when to stop panic. Inflation and deflation work equally well for them when they control the finance. As we see in the movie, not all lending institutions have the same motivations.
Now, you take this loan here to Ernie Bishop. You know, that fellow that sits around all day on his brains in his taxi, you know. I happen to know the bank turned down this loan. But he comes here, and we're building him a house worth $5,000. Why?
Well, I handled that, Mr. Potter. You have all the papers there, his salary, insurance. I can personally vouch for his character.
Friend of yours?
Yes, sir.
You see, if you shoot pool with some employee here, you can come and borrow money. What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
As a former FDIC chair said, all too often, the large banks use their models and their algorithms, and if you don't fit in their boxes, you don't get the loan. And Dodd-Frank legislation is tying the hands of small lenders, shutting out buyers and shutting down lenders. Today, there are fewer lenders than at any time the government has kept records. 10,000 banks disappeared between 1984 and 2011.
This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. Come on.
In the movie, George gets to see what happens to the small town if Potter didn't have competition from credit unions and smaller lenders.
If it hadn't been for you...
Yeah, if it hadn't been for me, everybody would be a lot better off. My wife and my kids and my friends. Look, little fella, why you go off and haunt somebody else?
Yeah, so you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, eh?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
Pottersville, the only businesses thriving are vice. People are angry. The town is filled with signs like, keep moving, keep off the grass. Bert the cop actually shoots at George when he's running away and is no threat to anyone.
Stand back!
Everyone is a renter. No one has a stake.
Now, you're Ernie Bishop, and you live in Bailey Park with your wife and kid.
Look, Bud, what's the idea? I live in a shack in Pottersville. My wife ran away 3 years ago and took the kid, and I ain't never seen you before in my life, see?
Private property and everyone having a stake is the antidote to Pottersville.
Here, you're all businessmen here. Doesn't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers?
But whether it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or a global carbon tax? The global elite don't see you as a stakeholder. They want to turn us all into serfs and treat us like cattle.
Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan.
I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on.
Speaking of riches, do you find the salary amounts amusing when Potter tries to buy George off?
Let's look at your side. Young man, 27, 28, married, making, say, 40 a week.
45.
45. 45. George, I'll start you out at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, a couple of business trips to New York a year, maybe once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, John?
Would I?
Even if George had saved a lot of his $20,000 salary, would it have bought much a couple of decades later? By even the government's very conservative estimate of inflation, the dollar has lost 90% of its value since 1947 when the movie was made. The Fed's deliberate inflation is devastating to anyone trying to accumulate wealth through hard work and saving. So what is the answer to all the George Baileys out there 100 years after the government gave control of our money supply to private bankers like Potter? Well, Potter had more money than he could spend, but would any of you want to be Potter?
You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you were nothing but a scurvy little spider.
George Bailey finally sees how rich his own life is as he sees the fruits of relationship, honesty, and compassion.
In jail.
Go on home. They're waiting for you.
And if the public can awaken to the lies of the Federal Reserve, if it could even be audited.
Well, hello, Mr. Bank Examiner.
It would be a huge step to breaking the chains that enslave all of us. But ultimately, it is God that changes minds and changes hearts. God hates oppression, and we can and should confidently pray that he will stop it.
I owe everything to George Bailey. Help him, dear Father. Joseph, Jesus, and Mary, help my friend, Mr. Bailey.
Help my son, George, tonight.
He never thinks about himself, God. That's why he's in trouble.
George is a good guy. Give him a break, God.
I love him, dear Lord. Watch over him tonight.
Please, God. Something's the matter with Daddy. Please bring Daddy back.
Dear Father in heaven.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Stacy Washington in this segment. She is co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. She's host of Stacy on the Right, which is a show that's broadcast daily on Urban Family Talk at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You'll find her on Twitter, Stacy on the Right, and also her website, stacyontheright.com. I wanted to get you on, Stacy. Thank you for joining us. I wanted to talk about this article you had about the Cadillac tax at the beginning of the broadcast. I talked about $1 trillion of Obamacare taxes that are repealed if the House Bill 1628 goes through. I mean, they got taxes on health savings accounts. They got taxes on medical devices, prescription medicine, retiree prescription drugs, taxes on health insurance. I mean, the entire thing really ought to be called Obama tax, shouldn't it? But talk to us about the Cadillac tax.
Well, so in thehill.com, my article, Let's Scrap the Cadillac Tax Before It Costs Americans Money and Their Lives, I recount a little bit of my complicated medical history and the fact that I've been able to survive all of the numerous tests and procedures and two surgeries And the reason I was able to get through all of it is because the grace of God, first of all, and second of all, because my husband has a Cadillac tax or a Cadillac health insurance plan through his employer. Now, this was something that he negotiated. Obviously, all employees get a chance to kind of bargain and negotiate with their employers, and employers offer perks and benefits to health insurance plans to try to entice and retain good, talented employees. And so it's not really a Cadillac healthcare plan. It's really what I call a minivan healthcare plan, because we drive a minivan and we have kids living at home, and you know, my husband's income supports all of that. And so it's not just me, it's 175 million Americans who are in the same situation. And I hate the way that this was marketed. It was made to seem as if rich people have all of these healthcare benefits that they don't deserve, so they should be taxed, while the rest of us are scraping the bottom of the barrel. The truth is, most Americans who have employer-sponsored coverage have very good health insurance plans. And so this tax is something that Democrats don't even care to defend. Everyone is kind of running away from it, which is why I think it's a prime time for our elected members in the Congress, both houses, to rush through a repeal of the Cadillac tax. It's easy for them to do. They control all of government right now, and it would help Americans because employers are already making the changes, David. They're already anticipating the implementation in 2020, and they're already reducing the amount of benefits. They're increasing the co-pays, the amount of money that you have to pay in your deductible, and they're doing that so that they can stay below the threshold of $29,900 for a family of four and $10,900 for a single person in health insurance benefits.
Well, you know, when we go back and we look at this, this whole terminology, as you got in your article, they say a Cadillac plan, they define as something that was, quote, overly generous. And it's like, who gets to define what is overly generous? We've got the Obamacare plan that is telling us that we have to have some single men have to have a maternity plan. They're forced to buy something that they're not going to be able to use. I mean, to me, that's overly generous. It's a giveaway. It's an overly generous mandate in favor of the insurance companies is what's happening with most of this stuff. But it's also, I think, the essence of this. And we see this from the Democrats. We see it from the left all the time. And that is ruling by creating envy of people. You know, they're the party of envy, really, aren't they? They're saying, these people over here, they've got a good insurance plan, so we need to tax that and take that away from them.
Right. So first of all, David, let's start at the top. The people who passed the Affordable Care Act, the people who gave us Obamacare, they also gave themselves a waiver. Well, they didn't give it to themselves. President Obama gave them a waiver so that the increased costs that they experienced by being on Obamacare are all covered because they made themselves a group. So they are their own group. So the thing that we want most, which is to be able to gather together in groups.
Or let me interject here, as George Carlin would say, they made themselves a club, and you ain't in it, right?
Right. And David, are you in it?
I'm not in that club, no.
I'm not in it. Kids aren't in it. We even have a dog. He's not in it. So I really want Americans to understand when you're reading this story, there's so many other women like me out there who've had, you know, surgeries, men who've had surgeries, children who've had surgeries, and their lives have been saved by these fantastic plans. We're talking about $250,000 of health insurance benefits that were spent on me testing, misdiagnosing, retesting, and then solving my medical problem. And an Obamacare plan never would have allowed me to go through all of that. And so I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be able to talk about this subject. But I also want people to understand that this isn't something that you're going to see a huge fight over. Yes, it dismantles Obamacare, but it's a part of Obamacare that we were lied to about. Barack Obama told us that rich people had benefits that needed to be taxed, but what he meant was you have benefits that need to be taxed to pay for this tiny sliver of Americans who don't have health insurance. So instead of taking care of that tiny sliver, they want to destroy health insurance for all of us. And that's what the Cadillac...
That's the essence of it. Yes, you hit the nail right there. And again, it's a policy based on envy. Oh, we're going to help the poor people here by destroying the middle class. Yeah. They could have just helped the poor people over there, but instead they had to destroy our health care. And people who are responsible are seeing these 40, 50%. You're talking about how this hits the middle class because of the inflation that we're seeing in health care premiums. People, in many cases, are paying more for their health care than they are for their home mortgage. And that's going to continue to go. And as you point out, by 2020, they're going to put a 40% levy on these plans. And because of the inflation that we're seeing rapidly happen through these insurance plans, that's going to affect a lot of people in the middle class because of that inflation.
Well, Well, and also, remember, we have Medicaid and Medicare for the elderly and for the poverty-stricken, and then we have everybody else who's in the middle. So Obamacare was supposed to take care of the people who have no health insurance and or they have limited plans. And instead, it was really like a trick move by the Democrats to destroy all health care and force us onto single payer as a nation, which, again, if we had single payer, if I had VA health insurance, wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now, because those kinds of plans don't cover the kind of care that I received. Just an example, there are more CT scanning machines in one center, the tower at Barnes Medical Center here in St. Louis. There are more CT machines in that tower than there are in whole provinces in Canada. The reason they have government single payer, we have an innovative free market that is the world-class leader in, you know, advanced technology, medical treatments, and the creative genius that is everything that has to do with America. I mean, I can't say enough about it. We're talking about the very best of the best, the brightest people and their ideas and ingenuity, their machines and creative things they've created to diagnose what's going on with us. That happens in America. That's why Canadians come to America for their health insurance. That's why, Brits, people from the United Kingdom travel to the United States for surgery and treatment because we have the best here. So we need to dismantle Obamacare. And I understand they're going to repeal.
We've got to take a quick break. We'll talk about this on the other side. But, of course, people like Doug Jones have said Obamacare was never meant to be perfect. It's just a process. It's a process to take us to a single-payer system like they have in Canada or in the U.K. where the government runs all of your health care. The problem with health care in this country is not that we had a market. The problem is that we didn't have a market before this. The government had already intruded into that market. So we'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll talk about some other issues, fallout from the election, perhaps, and also the Me Too movement with Stacey Washington. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. David Knight, and we're talking to Stacey Washington. Her show is Stacey on the Right. You can find her on Twitter on Stacey on the Right, also StaceyOnTheRight.com. We're talking about her article saying that we need to repeal the Cadillac tax that has been put on healthcare plans that people in Washington have described as overly generous. If you've got an overly generous healthcare plan, we're going to take that away from you because we're the government and we know better. We're fair. And so the title of the article is Let's Scrap the Cadillac Tax Before Americans Start Paying in Money and Lives. Stacey, do you know that this is being discussed as to whether or not this is going to be part of the American Health Care Act, House Bill 1628 that just passed? Did they put that in there, or is this something they're still fighting on?
This is something that we're trying to draw attention to. So that part of the reason that I wrote this piece, and you can go to Twitter and type in fight the 40, and you'll see a lot of us kind of banding together to try to bring this up as an issue. It's why I was so grateful that you're having me on the program today. We're asking people to just call their congressperson, call your senator, tell them that we need more co-sponsors for the bill to repeal this, and we need all of them to agree to get rid of this tax. It should be a bipartisan issue. This shouldn't be an issue of right or left. It should be 175 million Americans who have health insurance plans, you know, sponsored by their employer. That's a no-brainer. Everyone should want to get rid of that. Oh, yeah, you have a fantastic graphic up right now. Go there, retweet what they're doing, and also call. I know sometimes when you hear someone say, call your senator, you think they don't pay attention to that anymore. They do. Their offices log those calls. They keep track
That's
of
right.
them. And when they see
That's
a
right.
lot of movement on an issue, they understand that their constituents are motivated and they want to do the kind of things that we're looking for because we're going into 2018 and that's the new election cycle. So they're
right. It's very important. You don't have to try to persuade them about this. Mm-hmm. You just need to make it clear. I'm calling because I oppose this or I support that or whatever. And then they log that and they do look at those tallies. They're not going to pay attention to your argument. They're not going to be persuaded except by the numbers of people who call. So if you log in, that's important. And exactly. We say fight the 40, you're talking about a 40% tax on health care programs that they think are overly generous. And that's going to take place in 2020. And they have not indexed, amount. So we've seen rapid inflation in health care insurance policies. So they put this fixed amount, say, well, if you got an insurance policy, a health care plan that's valued at more than $10,800 for individuals or so forth, they're going to put a 40% tax on that for people to make it go up even faster. And we've already got health care going up faster than a cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And no end for that bubble.
Wait for the bubble on that. Don't ask me about Bitcoin. I don't know enough to even have a conversation. But I'll say this, David, you're so right about the call. So when you call, you don't have to have a script prepared. You don't even need to have the article in front of you. Just say, I'm so-and-so, I live in the district, my address is, and I oppose the Cadillac tax, and I'm calling to ask for its repeal. And they might take your phone number, they might not, they might just say, okay, thanks for calling. All they're doing is logging in that you called, so you don't have to try to convince the person who answered. The other thing is, what's so important about this to understand is that without us putting the pressure on them, they're going to move on to other things. After they pass tax reform, they'll hopefully repeal the individual mandate as a part of that package, and then they'll move on to the other items in their agenda. This is something that we have to draw attention to, and those phone calls will get that done. Also, they pay attention to Twitter. They're really connected to what we do on Twitter, so that's why it's important to retweet if you're on Twitter or if you're on Facebook. Post the link and say, I care about this. I don't want this tax anymore. And it's really hard right now for the Democrats to defend the Cadillac tax. In light of everything we're learning about them, their sexual harassment payouts, they're so mired down in trying to defend themselves that they don't have time to defend this, which makes it a prime time to get rid of it.
Well, and I think we need to make sure that people understand that it is a tax. As I pointed out with this list of Obamacare taxes that are in that bill, these taxes that right here, those alone total over $1 trillion. And Obama campaigned saying he would absolutely not raise taxes on any American earning less than $250,000. Well, that's a lie because the Supreme Court said to give this legal authorization, they said this is a tax. Mm-hmm. And so it is a tax. It's more than $1 trillion just with these. And that's not including what is going to be coming on with this 40% tax on quote unquote Cadillac healthcare plans.
That's right. And I guess, David, there's been times where I've thought about this. You know how you'll be washing dishes or you're doing something mindless and something pops into your mind. And this subject has popped into my mind numerous times over the past year where I don't understand anyone. I don't care if you're a Democrat, I don't care if you're a Republican, if you're a Bernie Sanders socialist. I don't understand anyone saying you have good health insurance and I'm going to take that away from you. I mean, if you've ever been sick before, you know how hard it is already just to be sick, but to also worry about how you're going to pay for it, to have your family members going bankrupt, trying to pay for your health insurance to keep you alive. It's unconscionable. It's the kind of stuff that you think you're probably going to burn in hell for doing this. And I won't get to see it because I'm not going to be in hell. But geez, what kind of people put a tax on something that can save your life?
That's right. Instead of saying, you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan. He says, you like your health plan? I think it's overly generous. I'm going to take it away. I'm going to put a 40% tax on your health care plan over and above all the other taxes. And that's the thing, Stacey, when you look at this and we look at people who are being responsible, who have health insurance, or maybe they've got it through their employer or they took it out on their own. One of the things that he taxed was health savings accounts. Yeah. People who don't have an employer who gives them health care. And they would do the right thing by setting money aside for an emergency. They withdraw it. They get a tax on the money that they set aside. I mean, how perverse is that? And how wrong is that? You're talking about, people burning in hell for this. I think that's horrible. If they wanted to help people afford health care, then what they would do is not punish them for saving money towards their health emergencies, and they would also give us, let's say, an income tax deduction so we could pay for our health care or even our health insurance before we send that money to Washington. But they take that out of the tax plans by putting these really high limits before you can even start to take a deduction, and then, of course, it's whatever marginal rate you're in. If it's 20 or 30%, then you get 20 or 30% of that that they allow you to take out. I mean, they don't help us at all. They take the money, and then they dole it back to us like children on allowance.
Well, David, you make an excellent point there about the HSAs. We have an HSA. I don't know anyone in our immediate circle of friends. I'd say I don't know anybody who doesn't have an HSA right now, because if your deductible is $7,000, you need that HSA to set money aside on a monthly basis to make sure that you can cover your deductible if you get sick. It doesn't matter if your deductible is $7,000 if you only do preventative care all year and nobody in your family gets sick. But the minute you need a test, a CT is around $1,900 here in this area, then you're not going to want to come into your grocery money for that or your regular emergency fund for that. You want to take that money out of your HSA, and it shouldn't be taxed. You pay for the procedure. It's a covered thing. If you need to take money out of your HSA for an emergency that's not health related, then you get taxed on that. That's a part of the bargain. But to add an additional tax on HSAs is basically saying, hey, I know you're really responsible. I'm going to punish you with a tax. You know, Merry Christmas.
Or you're talking about people who need help. You know, they're always talking about how we got to help poor people. We got to help people who don't have much money. Retirees, prescription drugs, they tax that. Tax medical devices and so forth. Yeah. You're going to, you know, it doesn't make it affordable. And his legacy is not Obamacare. His legacy is Obama tax. Just with these taxes, $1 trillion. That's the real legacy of Obama and the Democrat Party is taxes. And that's really what we ought to start calling it, because there is no health care and it's not affordable. So let's just call it the Obama tax.
That's all. I called it that right after the Supreme Court ruled that it was a tax. I started calling it Obama tax. And yeah. I had a lot of people tell me that I was heartless because we have employer-sponsored insurance. And I don't understand how it is to be a sole proprietor or a small business owner and not have access to the same kinds of plans. And that is just crap. I do understand that. But what I'm looking for here is for them not to tax things that we need, and they should just leave us alone. Like, this is yep. This is the mantra, isn't it, David? This is our mantra. Leave us alone. Just do the stuff that the Constitution tells you to do, like the defense, the border, you know, roads, bridges, and leave ourselves.
That type of thing. Yeah, that would be a nice change, wouldn't it, to leave us alone. Yeah. Of course, they create these perverse incentives saying you can't deduct these things unless you've got an employer. We'll be right back with Stacey Washington.
For the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Stacey Washington. I want to get her take on what's going on with Me Too, or as I should say now, Me 2.0, as they're reviving these charges against President Trump. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have 50% off on a wide variety of our most popular products, things like Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, Knockout, or All-Natural Sleep Aid, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, Prostaguard, all those 50% off. And we've got a couple of new products, Cell Force and Alpha Power, both of those 50% off as an introductory price. Take a look at the items we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com, part of our massive Christmas savings. Our Merry Christmas to you, and thank you so much for supporting us throughout the year. Let's go back to Stacey Washington. Stacey, what do you think about this Me Too movement, especially as we see it in the last week, turning against President Trump with the criticisms of Gillibrand saying, you can't criticize her. If you do, we're going to say that you are a misogynist. Maybe they'll start calling everybody that criticizes a female politician a rapist, because we see if you criticize them and disagree with the left on other policies, they typically call you a racist. So are we going to see everybody being called a rapist if we disagree with female Democrats?
Well, first of all, I am a racist, too. I don't know if you know this or not, David, but you and I are in great company. David and Stacey, a couple of racists. Never mind that I'm black. You know, it's that's irrelevant, because to the left, they are excellent at those Solilinsky tactics of labeling and shaming the enemy and changing the conversation and making it about what you've done wrong or who you are as a demographic, as opposed to the policies where they fail 100%. So on this Me Too movement, I want to be clear. I've been sexually harassed before. So I know how damaging this can be to a person's psyche, and it's wrong no matter who's doing it. But there are a lot of different avenues here. It's like we take something that's a multifaceted issue, and the Democrats just want to boil it down and make it seem like it's as simple as an apple. Well, even apples are kind of complex structurally. So let's unpack this thing. Okay, David, with the president, the claims against him, in my opinion, have already been adjudicated because they came out before he was elected. He was then elected. Right. It's over. So I'm not entertaining any discussion on whether or not someone was harassed by the president. As, in addition to the fact that I think it's ridiculous for you to think that if you're on a date with a man and he tries to kiss you, that that's sexual harassment. If you're on a date with a man and he doesn't try to kiss you, that date did not go well. So, I mean, and I'm saying with a married woman, you know, I dated before. I dated my husband. So I kind of know what a successful date looks like, and I know what the unsuccessful ones look like. So,
well, they're trying to criminalize any heterosexual relationships here. I read earlier this editorial from USA Today where they're talking about Star Wars, Anakin Skywalker. Before he becomes Darth Vader, they're saying he was toxic and a misogynistic predator because he said to Princess Amidala, a day hasn't gone by when I haven't thought of you. He says, that's just plain creepy. What's creepy about that? I mean, that most women would take that as a compliment, but they're redefining the relationships between the sexes at a very fundamental level when you go back and you start saying this kind of stuff about Star Wars. I mean, they're serious about this.
Yeah,
it's a joke, but they're serious.
We have to be serious, just as serious, about talking to our kids about this and teaching them what appropriate behavior is. So we teach our kids to keep their hands and feet to themselves. We should teach our sons what sexual harassment is and what it isn't. We should also teach our sons how to spot a good, kind-hearted, quality young woman as opposed to these social justice warriors who are running the Me Too movement. So this is where you have to kind of, you know, I'm one of the main ones guilty as charged. Put your phone down and get in your kids' faces. And I don't mean in an aggressive way, but in a way where you're talking about sex, they're going to be interested. They want to know what you think about that. Talk to them. Be honest with them. Share the story of how you and your spouse got together or some of your less than ideal dating situations so kids can understand. Otherwise, they're getting their information from these lunatics and they're going to be thinking that things that are normal. You know, my husband said the same thing to me many times when he was deployed in Italy and he and I were dating. He used to write me letters and tell me how he didn't go an hour without thinking about me while he was working in Italy and I was back here in the States in Florida on the base where we were both assigned. And
that's
I
right.
thought that was fantastic.
I have to say, me too.
Yeah.
You know, any normal woman wants to hear that. I mean, the thing that a woman wants to hear is, I love you. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying, oh, that's creepy.
No,
that's above the, you know, that's something that ought to be outlawed in these new rules that they're creating for everybody.
You know, a lot of young women right now are complaining about the quality of the men who are available, men who like to game, men who make $60,000 or $70,000 a year, but they live in a condo and they eat pizza every night and they game all evening and they only seek out women for sexual gratification. And so young women, millennial women are complaining about that. And in response to that, instead of basically bringing on a new renaissance of relationship building, they're slamming the door shut in the few guys who are interested in women, the few guys who are out there looking for a relationship. They're slamming the door shut in their faces. And there's mm-hmm. the rise of these sex dolls, which to me is quite disturbing. So, you know, this is all not happening separate from each other. It happens together in a maelstrom. And when you let the nincompoops be in charge, you let the nincompoops run social policy and the discussions of what's important in our day, this is what you get. We've got to take this conversation back. We have Representative Dan Johnson in Kentucky accused of molesting a 17-year-old girl as a pastor outside of his duties as a state representative. He's killed himself, shot himself under the chin on a bridge because of the allegations. This guilty because you've been accused thing, we've got this. So we have due process in this country and women have to be responsible too. I know how difficult it is to bring up something that is uncomfortable, that something you're accusing someone of doing something to you. But if you wait 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, please don't expect me to believe you. Not because I don't believe women, but because there has to be a limit to what you can do to a person. You let them get away with it. This is what you're saying. Let them live their life publicly as an elected official for decades. And then all of a sudden you want to say something? I just don't buy it. So I understand there are circumstances. The Harvey Weinstein thing is kind of the poster child for women who did speak up and were ignored or were bullied into silence. But that's not the same accusation that's being leveled against the president and some of these other individuals. So, you know, Salma Hayek.
Well, you know, it's Hollywood that gave us the sexual revolution, that told us that there were no rules for anything and just let their perverted imaginations run wild. Harvey Weinstein was saying, hey, Roman Polanski, He's true to his art. He ought to be allowed back. He's paid for his so-called crimes. Yep. His so-called crimes. So it's those people who sold us the sexual revolution and put it in every one of their movies and everything. Now they flip the narrative just like that and say, now we've got sexual revulsion. And we don't want to have any relationships, especially heterosexual ones. You're not allowed to talk to women at all, because anything that you say, you ask a woman who is 18 years old out for a date when you're in the mall, and that is now creepy, and that is signs of a pervert. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they were throwing in the Alabama stuff. I mean, they had some legitimate charges that were a he said, she said, but then they threw out all this other stuff that really rises to what we're looking at, the level of what we're looking at with this nonsense about Star Wars from this USA Today editorial.
Well, so one of the allegations that has been brought forward against President Trump is that when he was running the Miss Universe pageant, I guess it was, he had access to the women's dressing rooms, and he would go in and he bragged about inspecting it. And so my question is, how is that any different than the push to allow women into the male locker rooms on the NFL and in the NBA? Remember, yeah, we were told women have to be allowed in there, even if the men are uncomfortable, because that's a workplace. And so if they're running around nude and there's a woman in there, that's their fault. That's their problem, because it's a workplace. So if that applies for them, for women, then why doesn't it apply for men? I'm not saying I'm comfortable with either situation.
That's right. It's just a double standard.
Yeah.
Just, and these are also the same people who are pushing for the transgender bathrooms, yeah, and saying, look, if a guy, if President Trump had put on a dress, it, yeah, would have been okay.
Great,
right? Yeah. You know, and that's what they're selling, yeah, everybody else. Without our consent, for a small minority, they want to put women at risk. We have separate bathrooms because we're trying to minimize sexual predators in a private area like that being able to get to women and children. That's why we had it. It's not to, it's to protect women and children.
So I love the people who do your graphics. I mean, your show's fantastic. As we talk, the graphics fly up. It's exactly what you just said.
They're fast.
I'm telling you that they do not have the ability to fully encompass everything that they think at the same time. You cannot believe that it's okay for women to be in the locker room with a bunch of naked men doing interviews and not think it's okay for Donald Trump to go in and inspect while the women are changing in these beauty pageants. And remember, if you know anything about modeling, models change clothes in rooms where men and women are present, because some of the men are the ones who help dress them so they can change clothes faster so they can get back out on the catwalk. So this is not a situation in America where people aren't in the workplace and there's no place where you can see another person nude at work. It's just,
that's right. Yeah. It's like a locker room environment. It's like, you know, where the models are and that sort of thing. That happens all the time. And the thing that bothers me more than anything is the transgender bathroom situation. But that has to be forced on us at the point of a gun. Thank you so much for joining us, Stacey Washington. You can find her on Twitter, Stacey on the Right. Also, StaceyOnTheRight.com. Her show airs on the Urban Family Talk radio network at 3 p.m. Eastern. And that's it for our radio show today. Thank you for joining us. I'm David Knight.